Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Bites and Bits. If you heard me before, you're going to hear me again. My name is Matt Malin. This is
Bites and Bits.
Yeah, their one-stop shop for food and laughter. We are a food and comedy podcast where we share a meal, chat about food, comedy, and everything in between. Ah, thanks for that sweet theme intro. Get that fade down. Oh, yeah. So good. So good.
Don't forget to introduce yourself.
I'm Matt Malin.
And I'm Hisham Kaladi.
Oh, that was the smoothest intro we've ever had in the history of the pod. You know, this is such a pleasure. This is a celebration because we're about to drop season 3 tomorrow. And we couldn't be more stoked than to be on the Sonar 12-hour podcasting marathon brought to you by Manscaped.
So, holiday marathon, baby!
Here we go.
My balls have never been fresher because of Manscaped.
And you know what? Normally we chat a little bit, but I want to get right to our guest because he's sitting in between us and it would be so awkward if we just talked about him for too long. You know what I mean?
Today's guest is legit one of my comedy heroes and favorites. He's a stand-up, improv, and sketch comedian, actor, and voiceover artist who hails from the west coast of Canada.
Yeah.
He was part of Picnic Face, the comedy troupe that went viral on Funny or Die. For 6 seasons, he played Simon Hunt on Mr. D. He co-created the dark animated series Gary and His Demons, and he did stand-up set on Conan O'Brien, and he's a huge basketball fan, Mark Little!
Mark, such a pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you.
On this beautiful, in Toronto, snowy Sunday afternoon.
Hella snowy.
Yeah, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Am I right?
Yes, you are right. You're right, my man.
Factually correct.
So, you know, Bites and Bits, what we do on this pod is we eat and talk a little shit. So let's get to the eating part first. So we're going to get into our first segment. It's called First Bites.
First Bites.
There it is. Oh, so sweet. It's the sultry sounds of Ryan Sheedy's voice. Shout out to our sound designer, Ryan Sheedy, coming through with those sweet, sweet stings. All right. So what I've ordered for us today, this is brand new to Canada. I'm very excited and a little scared. So this is the Gravy Lover Sandwich from KFC.
Oh, my God.
So it's a chicken sandwich, but on top of it is a hash brown with an indent.
Oh, no.
So you can pour a little bit of gravy into it. Now, the indent seems to be filled with cheese, which is going to make it a little tricky. So you can pour as little as much. You can just get wild with the gravy if you want, or you can dip it in, whatever you want to do. Hisham, first thoughts.
This is a nuclear bomb to my gastrointestinal system. Like, I know for a fact I am going to suffer for the next 3 days. I'm taking a bite. I'm not eating this whole thing. This is like, I have reached a point where my body is like fighting and screaming me just every ounce of like just to not eat this. This is insane.
Mark went for a gentle dollop of gravy. I went for a healthy serving, and Hisham is abstaining altogether.
No, just fuck it. I'll do all the gravy.
Meeting?
Oh my God, he just dumped the entire gravy.
Oh, that's making me.
Dude, you gotta show the people. Hisham, you gotta show the people.
It's dripping. It's dripping.
Oh my God. This is
pop art. This is worth $100,000. Where did you said this is new to Canada? Where did it come from? Like, is this
immigrant? The bowels of hell.
So America. Okay, America.
Yes. All right. Well, take a bite, friends. Wow. And let's get into this. Hisham.
Well,
you're gonna ruin your nice blazer. You are looking like a concierge from an 80s movie right now, my friend.
Yeah. Now you're going to look like a dirty concierge from an 80s movie. Oh, here we go.
Well, there we go. Yeah, get in there. I mean, also a side note, I haven't eaten KFC since I was 14 and my entire family got food poisoning from KFC. So this is the first
time.
Well,
you're going to get it again.
Yeah, I hope not. That's
my wow.
All right, first impressions, Mark, from a culinary perspective.
Well, okay, from a culinary man, I'll be honest with you. On my way over, I was like, I'm a bit sleepy. I want to get a coffee, but I hope that doesn't ruin my palate. I hope they don't get mad at me for damaging my palate. I really didn't know what to expect. And then this showed up, and I wish I had a little less palate to work with.
I was going to say, this is the thing that's going to destroy your palate.
Yeah, here's my first impression. Wow. And this might just be because we're not eating it fresh out the KFC oven. the chicken is not nearly crispy enough. And it's kind of making me too aware of the sandwich. Like, I feel like when you get a Popeye's chicken sandwich, the combination of the spice and the crunch really distracts you from what else might be going on. There's no distraction here. And the gravy is a psychotic addition.
Yeah. Designing a hash brown with a pocket for gravy. Like, this is the gravy lover sandwich, though. And I do love gravy. So
is this supposed to, like, this is not a great, like, is the gravy part of the sandwich? You keep saying gravy sandwich.
Yeah, it's meant to be part of the sandwich because that's what the hash brown pocket is for. But I'll tell you, the hash brown pocket is not near deep enough for a gravy lover.
I'm sorry, why do we have a hash brown pocket at all?
Yeah.
This is some stoner's nightmare sandwich. They're just the last three things he could find that he could deep fry in the goddamn fry. This is the so good, though. Like, it's so good. Oh, wow,
twist in the 11th hour.
I hate all of this, but this tastes so good.
My second bite had some cheese in it, and then I started to come around. But I should say that this is a stretch calling this a pocket. If you have a pocket that immediately fills with cheese, that's not a pocket. That's just cheese. It's just...
You could have just put the cheese as like a slice of cheese or a piece. Why do you have to make a dent in the hash brown?
Put the cheese on the bottom or like put the hash brown. I don't know.
Has anyone ever tried this? Anyone viewing this right now? We want to know. Throw it up in the comments if anybody has ever tried or would try what is both an abomination and a sandwich.
I can't eat any more of this. I'm sorry. Like
You love it too much, but you made like a burger soup on your plate. So I can understand why you are resistant.
Well, I had the full gravy experience. You guys are a bunch of jabronis. That thing isn't even wet. Your sandwiches aren't even wet. I went full out and... I don't want to say I had the full experience. It tastes great, but this should be like a slider at most. Like this.
Can I say easily the worst part of this sandwich is the gravy? I need the KFC gravy despisers sandwich. Gravy avoiders sandwich.
That's literally every other sandwich.
Yeah, I feel like I would like any other sandwich at KFC. Just save me from the gravy. The gravy's just, there's something wrong about it.
The only six guys who would buy this sandwich don't need this sandwich. They can just make it at home at night alone, sad with their cat. Okay,
this is like a new holiday treat. They've invested like, I want to say millions of dollars in marketing into this.
Some guy just named Greg was like, hey, I got an idea for you.
Well, I think you have to be like at least casually interested in marijuana to work on the board of directors for KFC. Like, I think it's kind of a requirement.
That is too much.
Yeah, you have
much.
To speak in a deep, like, Southern lawyer's drawl, but also like weed.
Because of the weed,
now,
though.
I may just be a weed-smoking judge from the South, but I love gravy.
And I'd like it on my sandwich more than I've had it recently.
I don't think it's too much to ask. That is. Put some of that gravy.
The irony is you also have to be wearing a linen suit. And this is so messy that linen suits are just getting thrown out.
Oh, Shout out to Bites and Bits writer Tony Hall who came up with this. This is...
Yeah, you found this abomination.
Wow. Now, I do like... And I don't know if Popeye started this trend. Because you know how like the McDonald's chicken sandwich is like the chicken patty... is shaped like a beef patty. Like it's all perfectly sort of symmetrical and thin.
Yeah.
And then I like it when the chicken's just like a chunk of chicken. Hell yeah. It's kind of malformed.
Yeah.
Some parts of the sandwich are higher than others.
Yes.
It's got like multiple slopes. So there's like the toppings just constantly sliding off no matter what. Yeah. I'm on board.
Yeah.
I do think that when the Popeye's chicken sandwich, when like the thing that was like going viral in the States, when we finally got it up here in Canada, it changed the chicken sandwich game.
Mm-hmm.
I do think you're right. Like this is on the backs of so many good chicken sandwiches before it, right? But let's talk about it.
On the shoulders of giants.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. But yeah, I would probably prefer to eat a Popeye's.
But it's crazy. Like if you ate a Popeye's chicken sandwich and someone was like, okay, tastes good, right? Now what if we replace those two subtle, delicious pickles with lots of potato and gravy? What if we replace that sweet little crunch with a potato?
Not even like a slice of potato. It's a hash brown. Breakfast potato. It's a hash brown.
It's like a it feels like it's there to take up space. Like it tastes like filler.
It's just a vehicle for the cheese.
it's just taken away from what's good about the sandwich.
Yeah, it's like they could have done a potato bun if they really wanted that, but they're like, no, bun and potato.
Yeah.
They just had like a surplus of hash browns they bought. They're like, how do we get rid of this?
Yeah, that was the whole game. Like, we already got the gravy. and we made these dumb hash browns.
Hash browns really tricked people into liking potatoes again. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's time we got rid of that.
Wait, hash browns or potatoes?
Potatoes. I'm going against my Irish heritage. But no,
you have a whole show set in PEI. You're going to be anti-potato, bro?
Oh, listen, they're already mad at me for suggesting there's deer on the island. They really came down on me for saying there's a hospital in Cavendish. My creative license was revoked, and now I'm going full tilt.
No, one man against the tiny province.
Potato activist Mark Leffel.
Well, like the Tim Hortons wrap that has just like a big old hash brown crammed in it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm done with all this. Mm. It's not. It's never better. Mm. It's always a little bit worse to put a hash brown in something. The only thing I think a hash brown adds is salt and crunch. And if you can find salt and crunch in other ingredients, you're probably going to enjoy it more.
So, Mark, I see you've deconstructed your sandwich now and removed the hash brown. He puts his money where his mouth is, folks. He is not about that hash brown. He's decided that there's no place for that hash brown in this sandwich. He should have given up on the sandwich. Mark hasn't. I'm honestly, like, I don't know if I like it, but I will finish it.
Yeah, because you're from Alberta and have no self-respect, okay?
Well, I can't deny that.
Is that the stereotype? I feel like Albertans are the opposite in my mind. Yeah,
so much self-respect.
Full of pride.
It's like you have the province over everything. So you got to have full of provincial pride, but none of self-pride.
Yeah. We'll eat everything and we will never allow a rat to share space with us.
I am so glad you know that piece of trivia about Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
Largest landmass in the world, rat-free.
You know about that?
Yeah. Wait, was that on a bit? Are you just
No, it's true. Alberta has a volunteer group of rat exterminators. If you have a rat sighting, they will come and they will exterminate those rats. Literally, in the entire world, there's no land mass greater than Alberta that is rat free.
Okay.
They're at the borders and stuff. But that's why Matt had to leave. You rat! Senya! You fucking rat!
I have to just I don't like talking about Alberta, but like, I got to get into this. Why the anti rat sentiment? And did you say volunteer rat exterminators? They don't do it for money. They do it for the love of the game. You're telling me right now.
For the love of having a rat-free province.
I mean, there are arguments to be made that, you know, rats bring disease and they're bad
pretty
for
strong arguments.
Yeah. I feel like you're just describing Albertans, but please continue.
Yeah. And you know, they like eat, you know, it's an agricultural history of Alberta. They would eat grain. You know, it was, you know, there was a time when it was a dangerous thing. And a lot, I mean, they're, you know, people remove rats when they come into buildings. Like, it's not like if there were rats right here in the brand new Second City where we're actually recording this podcast.
There are none. Just this is hypothetical.
There are no rats here. But they would get an exterminator. But in Alberta, those exterminators, they just don't need to be paid for it because it's like a weird club of people that are just keeping Alberta safe one rat at a time.
I just love the idea that some guy who looks like Steve Buscemi has like hundreds of rat wall heads on his wall. He's like, I'm a champion at this.
crossing them out. because when I found out about this, I think this was the first time that it occurred to me that maybe, because in my mind, every creature brings something to the table.
Yeah,
sure.
Like a spider eats flies or like other pests or whatever.
Yeah, circle of life. Yeah, circle of life.
But apparently, and I might be wrong about this, but this is what I was told. Rats bring nothing to the table. They're pure pests.
Oh.
They bring disease. They spread disease. They're
filthy. No one eats rats. Other things don't eat rats. Like, yeah. No one wants to eat a rat because it's disgusting.
So it's just a problem. So if you can get rid of them, get rid of them.
They're kind of like humans. Because like humans have no predators and are just basically a problem at the top of the food chain.
Oh, disease carrying. Yeah. Yeah, multiple. Okay.
Honestly.
That's real.
Rats are constantly canceling one another. I work for this rat who wanted me to. Anyway.
Also, if you do definitely want to ruin your appetite, you should. There's these like these rat, these rats that get tied up together and become these.
The
like,
rat king. Yeah.
The rat king thing. It's absolutely horrifying. Oh. Don't leave. Keep listening to us. But after this podcast and after the whole Sonar Marathon, if you binge the whole thing, make sure you Google the Rat King, rat's nest, just absolute terror.
This doesn't normally happen to me, but you saying the word Rat King did create a little bubble of nausea in my throat.
Are you sure it's
not? Maybe the sandwich. I was going to say the sandwich. Yeah. That's why you need the hash brown, okay?
Yeah. The hash brown, that tamps that down.
Should we game it up? I think it feels like game time.
I'm 100% down. Are you kidding?
Yeah, let's go.
It's the holiday season. As the weather turns, we get extra cozy in our homes. We tend to spend more time consuming food and entertainment. Marky Merck, we want to ask you this holiday season, what is binge, things you can't get enough of, and what is cringe, things you can't stand? Mm-hmm. This is a rapid fire, first thing that comes to your brain, binge or cringe.
It's pretty tough for me because I consume a lot of cringe.
Oh. Is it,
are you, low bar on this one.
Do you prefer the cringe over binge?
No, I don't know. Sometimes I watch.
What if you binge or cringe? Oh, here, another layer. It's all right.
All right.
Rapid fire. Binge to cringe.
Binge or cringe. Mm-hmm. The TV show Wednesday.
Oh, I guess avoid. So if I might, I don't know if I cringe at the idea of it, but it's not for me.
White Lotus season 2.
Oh, binge. I'm almost done it.
Have you caught up to all the episodes you've watched last week?
Season finale is tonight.
Yeah, we're going to find out who does.
Oh.
No spoilers.
It's the first episode. Listen, I just did a set and I made that joke and someone said spoilers.
Yeah, like, I know. It happens in the first episode. Exactly.
It happens in the cold open.
Who do you think? Based off of your ideas, who do you think could be the person?
I hate
to
spoilers.
Die?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Everyone, plug your ears if you don't want to hear this.
I can't. I literally can't.
Okay. So plug your ears. Don't listen to this.
I'm going
to
mute him right now.
So I think it might be Jennifer Coolidge's husband coming back to collect the prenup money. And then she's going to go fucking ape shit and kill him.
I thought it was going to be the Italian prostitutes because that guy goes crazy and drowns them.
I think it could be. Well, we know it's going to be more than one person.
And back to the game.
AI art.
I don't know enough about it, but binge, I'll say.
The Transformers Rise of the Beasts. They're making it off of Beast Wars.
Beast Wars. The cringe.
I had a little light in my eye. I was trying to vote. No. He threw me under the bus.
Your taste is garbage.
Ferrero Rocher chocolates.
Oh, binge if I may.
Candy cane flavored desserts.
Cringe if I may.
Gingerbread.
I'll binge until I cringe.
IPAs.
That's a cringe for me.
The World Cup.
World Cup has been an off and on, but more binge than cringe.
Nice. Fred Van Fleet shooting less than 40% from the field.
Well, that's common at this point. So I guess we're all as a nation and a city forced to binge.
And one last final one, Christmas Jello salad.
I don't know what that is, but cringe.
And that's been Binge and Cringe with Mark Little. Marky Mark, we got you for about 25 more minutes to get the rock climbing down. So we're just going to rapid fire through some conversations.
Or
we could even take our time. You know what I mean? Like, we could just like have a real conversation.
Take
a
moment.
I mean, literally in the history of this podcast, I know this is a bit of a truncated version, but no one has crushed a game faster than Mark Little.
Was I supposed to riff?
I was really worried. Oh, it's phenomenal.
I felt like the pressure was on.
He really teed it up and said, we got to go on this one. And you delivered. And I love that.
I feel like I've missed it.
I'll be honest. If we just circle back to that binge or cringe game, what the fuck is a Christmas Jello salad? That sounds like the whitest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Now that we've said it, I'm picturing a Jello mold.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my grandma used to make them. Like, there's like ambrosia salads. That's in the same world.
Ambrosia? Yeah, that's what the Greek gods used to drink.
No, this feels like really suburban white people food. So it makes sense that Hisham, this was not part of your
at all. Yeah, did not have this on the sister's.
Did you ever have this at like when you were a kid with like at a family get together? Some aunt or your grandma would like put like fruit or vegetables even into like a Jello mold and serve it as part of like a fancy meal. Have you ever had anything like this?
No.
I definitely skipped it. I thought it obviously sounds terrible. It's straight out of like 60s homemakers magazines,
yeah, I'm
right?
I'm picturing that, yeah.
It's like when Jello coming out, it's like, oh, and it's that mid-century modern, like the geometric shapes of the Jello molds. It was like, it felt like, you know, there was a time when it was like modern cuisine. It was like really interesting and like you can make a salad into any shape and like anything can be a salad.
Yeah, I'm picturing it and it seems cool to look at.
Yeah, it is. It's like, I remember like lime green often and there would be like some like cabbage and stuff inside. I mean, I always avoided it because I couldn't do it. I'm like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
Now an ambrosia salad is like a sweet thing. It's almost like a fruit salad in like with like Jello form. So that's okay. That makes sense to me. Like if it's a fruit salad that's also like in Jello, have you ever had that?
Yeah, as long as it's sweet and sweet.
Yeah,
but the moment anything savory gets tossed in there, that's a truly monstrous mix.
Yeah, exactly. You said Jello and vegetables?
Well, so have you ever had a tomato jelly? Maybe this is another thing you've never had. It's like a cold gelled tomato soup. It's sort of the same era.
Oh, only on planes.
Yeah.
Again, are you doing bits right now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to learn and grow. I didn't know if it's comedy or not.
Because you know when you're on a plane, you get tomato juice, but never anywhere else.
That's really funny.
That was like the sort of complicated thing I was going for.
No. And we appreciate you really showing your work there, Mark.
Master improviser, Marcus Little.
Yeah, this is honestly why my stand-up never works. Bombed last night. Shout out Nothing Fancy.
That is an absolute lie because this is one of the topics I wanted to bring up. And I would be remiss as a stand-up comedian if I didn't ask this question.
No.
How was it like performing on Conan, bro?
Terrible. He's so small. He's so short. He's way too short. He's like appallingly short.
Man, they can do a lot with an apple box, eh?
Yeah. He walks on two long apple boxes on each leg. Puts his jeans over them.
He looks like a kid sitting on top of an adult.
Yeah, he's got an apple box under his hair, so that's why it poofs up.
Shortest man in comedy. That's what everyone didn't know about Conan. Yeah.
Although, you know what? Ludacris was on that taping, and he is a teeny tiny man. He's a little thimbleman.
Yep.
Yeah. He was surrounded by the crew, everyone. There was like five or six handlers around him at any given time. And he's just a little borrower of a man.
Yep.
Hiding in the walls and stealing your thread.
Wow, sick specific reference.
I'm really trying to bring borrowers back into the lexicon. But I shouldn't be, because then it's going to get a Netflix fucking reboot. Then we're going to have to deal with hot borrowers.
Hot teen borrowers.
Hot Gen Z borrowers. I don't need it.
Yeah, why can't we just have ugly actors like when we were growing up, you know? Okay, so Mark, I want to talk to you about something. It seems like you live at Comedy Bar, how many shows you do all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like you've got a show every night of the week, almost. And not in the way that, like, stand-ups just kind of flit around. Like Mark Little presents something at Comedy Bar. So in this, you know, post-pandemic world, we're coming back to, being in person. What do you think should be the price for a live comedy show right now in Canada? What do you think is like the right ticket price? This is something that I get in debates about with friends, but you're doing so many of them. So where do you come down this
line? Wow. Well, first of all, I really admire the way that you walked with such a fine line of a compliment and an insult. And I don't think the insult was intentional, but
no,
I really became aware of how often I'm at Comedy Bar presenting shows, just unable to just live a normal human life away from the stage. I see, this is a question. I don't know because I've had conversations with friends who want to keep the ticket price cheap
to remove like barriers to entry kind of thing.
There's that element. And then there's also like, they're just, I think they're reacting to like all these kind of crappy shows that are charging like 15, 20 bucks a ticket.
Mm.
And then they're like, the best comedians you've ever seen in your life. And then the audience comes and they see like a crappy show. And these guys are like, I think there's like a sort of moral, like, I don't know, fighting back against that. But I don't know. It's all a bit confused. I guess at Comedy Bar, where they charge you so much for the stage and they take money off of each ticket sold, I think you have to charge like $12 to $15 at least to like just recover if you want to pay your comedians anything. Mm-hmm. But at other, like when people just do shows at little like bars or whatever.
Or they just give you the space for free or whatever.
Yeah. If there's that, then like, you know, pay what you can, $5, $10, like, it all makes sense to me.
I mean, it just feels wild to me that like, you know, I hope it doesn't embarrass you to say that you're like one of the most accomplished comedians in the country. And, you know, you'll have a $10 ticket price to come watch you perform. And it's a wild, it feels like as an industry, we still wildly undervalue like the talent on stage. It's crazy like to see musicians or to like go to an art gallery or like all of these other things, go to a film, right? We're not even competitive with those things. We're underselling that. And live comedy is, in Toronto and in Canada at large, is like absolutely amazing. Like the talent and the caliber is here. So like, are we doing like, is there an industry-wide disservice we're doing ourselves by not like pushing it a little bit higher and like trying to like pay people more and pay ourselves more?
I don't know. Like, I think with my shows, I wouldn't want to go too much higher because I'm like, I don't think it's going to change my life in the entertainment industry to charge $20 for an hour of like, a lot of new material. You know? Like, I do think that the industry could do more to like, I wish the Canadian entertainment industry was different than it was. And I wish, but I don't, you know, even in LA or New York, you're not paying a ton for like a live comedy show.
Going to the Improv or something.
Yeah, it's more just that like the people you're paying not that much for are going to move on to things that they get paid a lot.
Yeah.
So that's kind of built into the system. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that the answer to like fixing Canada's entertainment situation is to like
charge more at the box office.
Yeah. Not for this. Like, sure. I mean, if you're doing like a theater show or if I was doing like a big show, I think I'd charge more. But I think keeping the ticket price relatively low feels like an excuse to be like, well, if this one doesn't go well, at least I didn't charge you too much. Like, I'm going to try some new stuff.
I like that part. That's my mentality too.
But you're also got a day job, right? You don't need to make any money on comedy.
That is also absolutely true. Yeah.
It's different. Like,
I'm an agent of chaos. Yes.
Yeah. If you're grinding, you know, you like that $50 you're going to make for that show, and not too many shows pay $50. Let's be real. But the shows that do pay $50 at least, you know, which feels like a reasonable rate for like a comedian who's been working 15 years in the industry to like, you know, share an hour of their time with you, right? You know, that makes a difference. That can add up. But mm-hmm. if you're charging $10, it's even hard to pay that $50. I mean, I don't know. I'm not fixated on a particular. I do believe that we should charge more for sure. And like, especially when, you know, you get people on the bill. If you look around the stage, sometimes you got like literally 100 years of comedy experience on one stage in Toronto. That happens all the time, right? And then it's like $5. Like you're paying. It's like, it's just wild to me that this, you know, this whole thing is we've kind of view it as like, oh, it's our test kitchen. The live stage is our test kitchen, and hopefully we book a sitcom. Hopefully we do get film work. Hopefully we get hired as a writer. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me, and I think there's space for both. There's space for both.
I mean, I do admire all of the like non-comedian producers who like fly into town, like the monorail guy from The Simpsons.
We're gonna change everything
and start a show called like Bad Boys Drink Improv, and you're like, is this just theater sports? And they're like, no, it's not theater sports. It's a Bad Boys Drink Improv, and we're gonna charge $30 a ticket, and I'm going to pay $5 a performer, and then after 3 years of that, I'm going to go buy a yacht and sail into the sunset. And then there is a certain part of me that looks around and be like, man, I guess we could all do that if we all want to get a little grift in our stuff.
Shucks, baby, shucks.
So sort of tangentially related to this, there's this idea that like stand-up's the job and like improv is like the rehearsal or the training ground. Mm-hmm. I hear this sort of phrase bandied around a little bit. I've heard it spoken by Gary Rideau Jr., proprietor of Comedy Bar and you know, local comedy supporter. And I just want to get your take on that if you feel like that's accurate.
Stand-up is the job and improv is the training ground?
Yeah, like improv is not the job. Improv is not the thing you can do. So when you're doing stand-up, you're actually doing the end job. And when you're doing improv, you're practicing for something else in terms of like making money or building a career.
No, I don't think. I mean, I think that stand-up can more easily lead to jobs. But in terms of like the actual two forms, and I guess stand-up can get you more jobs in terms of like doing galas and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, just for laughs or whatever. But no, I think in terms of the forms, stand-up and improv are could equally be training or equally be jobs, depending on how you approach them and treat them. You know, I do like in Chicago, it's like you can really be an improviser and really do that as a job, or like it feels like that can be like part of your job.
Sure.
A job to do like these weekly or more than weekly improv shows. I will say that one thing that sets apart the philosophy of improv in Chicago versus Toronto is that they rehearse.
They rehearse
as a group.
Oh,
so it's not like they're rehearsing like the scenes they're gonna do, but they just
practice
practice getting tighter.
Ooh.
Like a basketball team would practice getting familiar and tighter. And then if they have a bad show or a good show, they debrief and then they work on the skills that are slipping.
Oh, I love that.
If they're falling into certain ruts, they try and work through that. If they're not taking risks, if they're not in sync, and I heard a guy from Chicago say like you should be rehearsing three times for every, it should be a 3-to-1 ratio, three rehearsals to show. And that Toronto, most groups that I've seen do not rehearse, period.
It's true.
You see it on the stage. You see it on the stage. You watch these shows and you're like, at best, you're seeing people do their little patterns that they do every show.
Mm.
At worst, you're seeing people not even truly be in sync. But there's like you see a lot of tricks get pulled out, and you're like, if a group's performing every week, man, I wish they would be getting tighter and better, so that every time I go see them, it's going to blow my mind how well they work together as a group. So I think maybe there's an extent to which groups in Toronto don't treat it like a job.
Well, that's interesting. Even in Calgary, we rehearsed a ton. with like every Monday night, every single Monday we rehearsed, and every Friday we did shows. So we were 1-to-1, and maybe, and if we had special projects, we would do it. But yeah, coming here and getting people to rehearse improv, it's like, they look at you so funny. They're like, what do you mean? You want me to come and rehearse?
It's not part of the culture.
It's interesting. Yeah. It really is. I think that's something that you hit the nail on the head there and maybe should do. If again, we want to see improv as more like a job.
And you'd see the rewards, you know, if you rehearsed as much as they say they do in Chicago and then put that product on the stage, audiences would flock to it.
Fire.
Yeah. Well, and the shows that are truly successful just have people doing that effectively over like a decade, right?
Yes.
If you look at like Lights Out Improv, if you look at like, you know, Rob Baker and Jan Caruana, when they do like an improv set, they're incredible. But they've built that. And they're not rehearsing every week, but they've done so much work together over decades that pays off, right? You know, so the troops that are really making it work, you know, they have done that effectively, but it's just taken years to get to that point to get tight. You're not getting that over a 6-month period, which you could do with more intense work.
Even years though is like, as long as there's progress happening, that's cool. I like that. And I mean, I don't think, I don't know. This is just what I'm repeating, like from what I heard. I do think.
We love hearsay on this podcast.
Absolutely. It's a whole shtick. It's a motto.
My favorite group that I've ever seen is the Sunday Service in Vancouver. And so they don't rehearse, to my knowledge. They don't rehearse ever. But they're just naturally so good, and they've been working together for so long in the way that you've said that it's just like they've just developed.
More than 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, certainly. But so I don't think it's a hard and fast rule, but I do think it's hard to argue that it wouldn't help.
As we mentioned off the top, Mark, you do stand up, improv, and sketch, and you've traveled the world, you've performed for a while. Where is your favorite place to perform? Each of those type of things.
It's so generous for you to say that I've traveled the world doing this stuff. Because that's, I mean, maybe.
From Vancouver to Cavendish.
From Sochi to Signing Sea.
Oh, I would never perform in Cavendish. They wouldn't have me. They'd boo me off the stage. I wouldn't survive a day. My first joke would be like, so I saw a deer the other day. And then they'd tear me up.
I went to the hospital after you gored me.
Where have I liked performing? Yeah, I haven't performed that many places because I get afraid. So I'll meet someone who's like, oh, I've been doing shows in like Singapore. You should come do them. And I'll be like, yeah. And then he'll be like, all right, when do you want to come in? Yeah. And I'll avoid communication because the idea of performing in Singapore just like terrifies me.
Wow.
Is it because you're performing in like a completely different culture, community, time zone, place kind of a thing?
Just the idea of, I guess so, but it's the same thing that keeps me from saying yes to like performing at headlining a comedy club in Winnipeg. It's really not that different. I'm just like, I build a worst case scenario in my head of an audience that's not going to get me. And then I'm like, oh, I won't enjoy the trip because I'll bomb and then I'll just be thinking about it. It's so stupid. It is
wild, Mark, because you're terrific. So
yes.
Yeah.
But I do.
You're a delight to watch perform.
I am scarred by the time that I went to Ajax and did 4 shows over 3
Okay, you went to Ajax. That's the scarring part. Okay,
tell us everything.
What happened?
No, there's not much to tell except that I bombed like more than you would think possible. Like, it was just silence, like for 25 minutes a set for 4 sets.
Oh,
it was crazy.
Did you get paid?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck them, bro.
Do you want to know the coolest gig that I turned down because I'm a little coward?
Please.
Honestly, yeah. That'd be fucking awesome.
So, you know Chris Hadfield, the mm-hmm. astronaut?
Oh, yeah.
Canadian icon.
Ever heard of him?
Did he ask you to perform in space?
Oh, Mark, tell us that didn't happen.
Yeah. Do you have like a comedic riff on David Bowie's A Space Odyssey that you could do in space?
At zero grad.
Here's what happened. So I did like years ago, he has this annual show that his son puts on called, I don't know why the name is escaping me right now, but it's just like an annual kind of like, almost like a TED Talk kind of format.
Cool.
And they like book a hall at Generator. It's called Generator.
Cool.
And his son's really nice. They get all these cool acts and then they also throw in, like the cool acts are like scientists, inventors, crazy stuff.
Oh, damn.
But then they also throw in like 1 or 2 comedians.
Ah.
And it's very funny to be a part of that. So I did that 1 year and like Matt O'Brien's done it. Yeah. Deanne Smith, Templeton Philharmonic, also from here. But anyway, so I sort of became pals with his son after that. And then they were like, we're going to do a special cruise up. Well, not really a cruise, like a boat trip up towards like Alaska.
Oh, fun.
And they're going to like, they're going to like, I don't know, like Chris Hadfield's leading this mission. And they're like, it's like a generator on water. And we're going to have people from all these different fields, like scientists and like a filmmaker and photographers and everything else and like musicians. And we're going to just like sail into the ice and experience it. And then every night we perform or like read for one another what we've sort of been working on. And they're like, we want you to come along as a comedian and do that. And you would perform for like, you would like take inspiration from the experience. And then every night on the boat, you would like do like
a tight five about whales,
a little set. And I was like, it sounds like a once in a lifetime opportunity that I could never say yes to. Because if I bombed on night one,
you are stuck.
I'm stuck with that same audience.
This is so funny. What we're finding out is Mark Little, 20 years into the game, fears bombing every single time.
I literally bombed last night. Last night. It like, happened
you're here,
so
you're
much.
You're here to just, like, tell another day. Yeah, of course it happens a lot.
But imagine you were at sea and you bombed. Then you couldn't escape.
And you're just in line at the buffet, the breakfast in the morning. Some astronaut comes over and is like, hey, you did your best, buddy. Like, yeah, comedy's hard.
Astronaut's like, takes a lot of guts to get up there. Like, oh, God. It's not the first time I've just wished I was a musician. You know, when you do a corporate gig and you're like, oh, to be a guitar player who just gets to fade into the background and doesn't need to compete with the conversations.
Honestly, yeah. Every time I have like a trash improv corporate gig where they just don't want you to be there, I wish that. I'm like, without like improv, when no one cares and everyone is talking so loudly, is one of the most painful, humiliating experiences you can have.
Oh, but imagine it at sea. Surrounded by luminaries of every field.
we've only got a couple more minutes here. I just want to shout out our season launch, which is coming up. So we are dropping episode one of season three, although we might be changing the episode format, a little behind the scenes there, but no big deal. Stay with us for that. But we are dropping our first episode of the season, and that is going to be with the incredibly funny Natalie Norman is going to be the first episode. That's tomorrow. So make sure you please subscribe to Bites and Bits on Apple Podcasts, on Amazon Music, on Spotify. Leave us some ratings, please. Good ratings would be helpful. we'd enjoy good ratings. Or, you know, just good ratings. That's it. We're asking for nice ratings. And yeah, that's all happening tomorrow, which is great. Before we let you go, Mark, here, what is your what's coming up for you? Anything you want to shout out?
What's on your plate? Yeah.
Oh, here's the thing that I want to shout out so much that I'm really excited about. Well, I've got my show every Friday at 7 p.m. at Comedy Bar.
Good stuff.
So come to that. It's very fun.
It's really funny. It's worth the $5, guys.
Yeah, you see comedians chatting one another, two of us on stage. But here's the thing I want to shout out. Jackie Pirico and I are starting a podcast. And it's called How Can We Help? And it's an advice podcast.
Nice.
And it's going to come out in January, and I'm very, very stoked.
Are you going for a TIG? You're going for a Don't Ask TIG? That Don't Ask TIG crowd?
Oh, no, every time I tell someone about this, they mention yet another advice podcast, and I'm like going crazy. We have to change the premise.
No, it's going to be great. I mean, you and Jackie are two of the most charming
killers.
Charming comedians.
Killers.
Right? Killers.
Jackie would never be intimidated by the open sea. Never. Not her.
You know, Jackie says yes to Chris Hadfield every time, and you know that.
No questions asked.
You know that's true.
She would.
Thank you so much for coming on, Mark. And we're so excited about this season. Please do check us out. You saw the handles come up, and listen. Keep listening to the Sonar Network Marathon. Lots of great acts coming up. Shout out to Manscaped, and thank you for spending some time with Bites and Bits. See you next time.
That's it for this week's episode of Bites and Bits on the Sonar Network. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now. We want to thank a few people for making all of this possible. Our producer, Aaron Conway. Writer, Tony Hall. Music, editing, and sound design by Ryan Sheedy. The Sonar Network. And of course, you, our listeners. Thanks for being a part of the bit and sharing some bites with us. We can't wait to have you at the table again. Follow us on Instagram at Hisham Kaladi, at Improv Eats, and at Bites and Bits Podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky?
In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.